On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this second day of October 2019. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where we keep the chat room. If you pick out a screen name and a password and jump in, you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of Anatole and Dowhead and Jimmy and Squeaky and capably moderated by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. Come on in. The conversation is fine. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's prayer meeting Wednesday. And I'm sorry about last night. I will tell you why I was not here. It will not be a pleasant story. At least it wasn't pleasant here. But before that, let me do what we always do here. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. Thanks to our second day of the month subscribers. Thanks to Dave and Reggie and Elizabeth and Rocco. Thank you very kindly to brand new subscriber yesterday, Shorty from L.A. Thank you to Smitty and Terry and Amherst, where only the H is silent. Thanks to Lauren, our correspondent in the far frozen wastes of far Alberta. Thank you to Rusty, thank you to Joseph, and thank you to Bob. Thank you all very kindly. Didn't get to have a program yesterday for reasons that I will shortly explain. We have a challenge on the table. I announced it on Monday. And Cat in Ohio responded to part of it, so that means we've only got $170 to go on Bruce's Memorial Challenge, formerly known as Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. There's $200 on the table, and if it's all met, well, by Jove, it will be your money will be doubled as we go forward this evening. So 17 folks, 10 bucks, 10 people, 17 bucks, that sort of thing. And as it turns out, this is going to be another one of those months where it becomes critically necessary to keep up with fundraising. There was no way I could have done a program yesterday. And it's a damn challenge to do one this evening. No one here in this house is okay. Agnes isn't okay, I'm not okay, and Ferg isn't here because he's in jail. I've told you before, and you know, I don't say this as an elicitation of sympathy or anything like that. I say this more in the way, because very seldom will you hear anything like this in the so-called for-profit media, because there it's just a world unto itself, and I don't know, maybe nothing like this ever happens, but it happens out in working America. It happens out in the part of the world where people don't have health insurance and where people can't get mental health help when they need it. I explained back in early August that we deal with a lot of mental health problems with our son. And there, you know, I guess there's no such thing as a mild mental health problem. They are all versions of their own different seasons in hell. Got bad yesterday. He had one of his blow-ups, one of his towering furies, only this one got a little worse. And I apologize to him in advance for mentioning this, but this community is something more, you know, this is not, a lot of you know him. A lot of you love him. His mother and I love him. But we were put into a corner that was simply hell. Hell for him, hell for us. And this is systemic stuff. And I run a certain risk in talking about this because I'm sure for the little right-wing turds and lurkers out there, this will be a cause for absolute, delicious, schadenfreude delight. But again, you aren't them, and they aren't part of this community that loves and cares for each other. I'll preface all of this by saying that I'm going to try to be behind the microphone just like always. But I can't necessarily make a lead pipe cinch promise of it. I pride myself for all the kidding and clowning around that I do on being a professional about this. I made a promise when we started all of this, you know, this is our anniversary month. When we started all of this over 16 years ago, that I was going to be here every evening and that I wouldn't do Rush Limbaugh Radio. In other words, I wouldn't chew up a few OxyContins for the refreshing burst of flavor and get behind the microphone and start rambling right-wing madness. And I've held good to that promise for over 16 years, going back to February 2004. We started this as an online-only broadcast on October the 24th, 2005. Two presidents have come and gone since then, and we're into our third one, much to our chagrin. When we started this in 2005, America was in a healthcare crisis. Tens of millions of uninsured Americans. Statistical excess deaths through the roof because people simply did not have access or availability of health care when it was necessary. It got ameliorated somewhat in 2009, but we are far from okay. We are far from where we need to be. There was news today that Bernie Sanders has suspended his campaign until further notice, because he experienced a cardiac event a couple of days ago. And they checked him out and found out he had blockages, so they put two stents in an artery. He's expected to recuperate well. But no one really knows what it means for his campaign. If I missed something along the way, you will forgive me, because I haven't been as plugged into the news as I ordinarily am, because we've been dealing with our own reality here. I'm not going to go into the deep particulars, but our son, who has, let us say, anger management problems, and can be can suffer from explosive I had one yesterday. Outburst does not count. Screaming at his mother and me, becoming physical with us. Threatening us. And we fled. And this is where, this is the part that is heartbreaking for his mother and me. We fled and went to the county seat in search of getting him emergency mental health care. In the state of West Virginia, we call those things mental hygiene proceedings. In other states, they're called commitment proceedings. Voluntary, you know, self-admit commits. Well, you can walk away from those, and he's proven himself to have a very hard time being compliant with medication regimes or his own therapy. If you think that we did this cavalierly, we did not. But when we finally talked to an official, we were informed, and Agnes could bear out every word of this. Well, you need to know a little bit about the process first, I suppose. In the state of West Virginia, when you need a commitment proceeding, the commitment proceeding is presided over by an official who is referred to statutorily as a mental hygiene commissioner. The mental hygiene commissioner examines the sworn petition and makes a determination of a couple of factors. Is the respondent, you know, the person alleged to be unwell, is the respondent addicted to alcohol and or drugs or intellectually disabled? Or is the respondent mentally ill or both? And if the finding is yes in any of those capacities, then the next question is the respondent a danger to himself or others? And it can, so if one is threatening, say, suicide, one is deemed to be a threat to oneself. If one has threatened to do harm to other people, one is deemed to be a threat to others. So by the time we finally spoke to a judicial official, it was 4:30. And the local mental health establishment in charge of these sorts of things shuts down at 4 o'clock. And again, Agnes can verify each and every bit of this. I'm going to see if she wants to come back and add anything. But they had shut down at 4 o'clock. And so when we explained what was going on, well, I just thought I would. I'm sitting here telling the story of yesterday, dear.
Oh, God.
And I wanted to make sure that I didn't say anything wrong, or wanted to make sure you had your input if you wanted.
My input is that the mental health system is completely broken, and they put too much on law enforcement and people who aren't trained to make that decision. But the first rule of helping anybody else is surviving yourself. And yesterday was one of those days to where we might not have survived one way or the other.
And that's not, and that is not trying to over-dramatize what was going on.
It was a bad day.
But the bottom line is, when we finally talked to some legal official, I explained, because I know this process, I said, we are here to do a mental hygiene. Our son is deeply mentally ill, may be addicted to alcohol, and he threatened to harm us. I said, he meets the standards for a mental hygiene proceeding. And the individual we were speaking with then explained to us that that really didn't matter, that the mental hygiene commissioner would not come out for anything except threats of suicide. And I looked at her and I said, so homicide is okay? And she shrugged.
Well, no, she corrected herself when I explained.
And so the only thing that was presented to us was the option of doing a domestic violence petition. And it was sold to us on the idea that, well, we could do that and he'd be picked up and jailed. And that then we could spend today working on getting him the help that he so desperately needs. Well, that's how we spent our day today. He spent his night and his day in jail. And he's terrified. And he's probably withdrawing. And,
but I'm sure that they are giving him his meds.
I'm not. It's the jail system. We asked, when they took him away, I said, you know, he's on psychiatric meds. Can he have his meds? And the deputy said, no.
No, they have to order them there.
And so, no, he couldn't. And then we found out today that, in fact, the judicial official whom we spoke to actually had the jurisdiction to call out the mental hygiene commissioner, but claimed she had been told that she was forbidden from doing so.
But let's look at it this way, too. One person will put the blame on another person in order to crawl out from underneath of it. He's had counseling and treatment for a very long time, and they all know it. And non-compliance is a problem, and the unwillingness to help oneself. And when you look at an official, because it's stigmatized, which is really crazy.
So what we found out today is that he's stuck there. The only way we can get him help is for me to go and drop the domestic violence petition, in which case he would just be on his own and still out there and mentally ill and no guarantee of a grant of the mental hygiene petition, because the dangerous moment has passed. That's the whole thing about the way that statute works, is that it has to be imminent.
And unfortunately, I refuse to live that way, which means he can't come home.
And so that's the box we're in. And I don't mean for it to seem this way, uncaring. If I say that, I mean, we're miserable, his mother and me. He, on the other hand, is incarcerated and God only knows what. I know this much. I know incarceration is not a remedy for mental illness. I know that there's no mental illness care in that facility. And so I know that things are probably being made worse, not better. But I also know that he can't come home. Not after, no. Not right now. Not as it stands. And there is no, and there's no guarantee of getting him help. This is what it means to live in such a brutal country where both health care and mental health care are concerned. Yeah. I mean, I've remarked for years, I have no health care. I'm one of those people who was not helped by Medicaid or the Affordable Care Act. And I apologize again, but I feel like this is a community. This is not some commercial enterprise. This is not some exercise in capitalism where we deliver you into the tender mercies of some godforsaken advertiser trying to get you to buy a widget.
Look,
we tell each other things here. You have shared things on air with me and with the rest of the community. And so when we have these moments, we share them with you.
And it's important that we share, because one person may know something that we don't. Any tips, suggestions, well taken, please send them our way. But it also is a venue to make a point that we're all in the same boat. One way or another, we're all the same.
That's the thing. If this is happening to... While we were sitting there yesterday, another almost identical case walked in the door. A 20-ish-year-old boy...
Who stabbed his father.
Who had tried to cut his father's wrists.
Well, he stabbed him.
He stabbed him. And... When you're in one of these circumstances, it feels like, oh, well, hell of a time for the obligatory Star Trek reference of the evening, but this is some straight-up Kobayashi Maru shit.
Well, that's...
It is a situation with no positive, acceptable outcome.
Well, and it's a group misery.
Our son is furious at us. Again, he's got anger and... problems, but he's furious at us because we took the steps we did.
Yeah.
But he lacks the judgment and the insight to realize that he created the situation in which we find ourselves. I mean, I'm pretty much this. It was a really high compliment. Back last July when I was in Philly, I got to hang out a little bit with our buddy Arnold from PA. And he said to me later, "Man, it's so cool. You're exactly the same guy on the radio that you are in person." And I took that as the highest of compliments. Because we endeavor to be that. And so when we share this, we do so by way of
connecting
with a community that has been deeply interconnected for over 16 years. And so I don't know what comes next. I don't know how this plays out.
We just keep trying.
All we can do is one day at a time and one foot in front of the other. I still want my son to have our son to have mental health care that he desperately needs. And at this point it appears to be impossible to get it for him. And he would not participate and get it. When it was off, you know, because we said, let's go, come on, please, you've got a problem, You got to deal with it.
I love you. I can't talk about it anymore right now. I love everyone. I need to go.
I love you, dear.
Love you.
So that's where all of this stands this evening. And if I'm a little addled or not at the top of my game, that's why. And, well, Darlene in Connecticut says, this is so tragic. I'm so sorry. You and Agnes had to do it, as heartbreaking as this is for both of you as parents, and as painful as it is to hear about this as one of your longtime devoted listeners. The two of you are so brave for sharing this with us. I'm glad you're all safe. At his core, I think Ferg is still a good kid. I hope he gets the help he needs. He is a good person. I've said it a million times if I've said it once. When he's good, he's great. There's none better. But it's like a switch flips. And he roars and he rages. And he threatens. And he grabs. The last thing he did is we were driving away. He picked up a piece of gravel in the driveway and flung it at the car. Back years ago, he had potential as a pitcher. He hit his target. Didn't do any damage. It just dinked off the car, but there you go. Stood in the yard and, you know, I've got some coolers out there by the smoker and the griddle and stuff like that. And he picked up an absolutely full cooler, full of pop and lemonade and ice and really heavy. Held it up over his head and flung it on the ground and dumped it all out. Picked up another one and threw it off into the yard. So, again, I don't know. I don't know what tomorrow holds. And I'm not the one in jail. Thank you, Jeff. Jeff on the left says, the Horn community is here with you and for you. Kyle says, I want to thank you for being open and honest with us as you can about the issues that he's having and bringing the issue of lack of mental health care in this country to the forefront, because seemingly no other media platform will do it. Thoughts with you, Agnes and Ferg, as you try to navigate what can seem like such a lonely world of mental illness, in your case, trying to help a loved one live and cope with it. Thank you for being here for us in so many tough times, making us laugh through the hellscape that is this country right now. We as a community will do what we can, individually and collectively, to hold you up in your time of need. I assure you it is not uncaring to say you can't live like that and have to make changes for living arrangements for yourself when you're living with someone who has a mental illness. My mother has had to do that with me, and she's the most caring individual I know. You have to take care of yourself, too. What he desperately needs is to be somewhere that he can't walk away from. And if it's a voluntary admit, he can walk out at any moment. The only hope we had was an involuntary. And even then this is the brutal nature of the hell in which we find ourselves. Even then, the mental health facility says, at best, no more than 7 to 10 days. Well, hell, you can't get medication titrated in 7 to 10 days. It's ridiculous. But in the midst of all of this, you have to be calm and controlled and not freaked out. And because if you show the lightest, the least hint of frustration, then you're the problem. I can say with all certainty that neither Agnes nor I did that. But I'd say that the two of us together in the last 24 hours have probably had something approaching all of 3 hours of sleep. Because it was a fearsome event. And it makes you fearful. In his right mind, he'd never harm anybody. When he's not, all bets are off. So, I don't know what more to say about it. If you want to ask any questions, ask, and if I can answer, I will. James in Illinois says, it's therapeutic. That said, you don't owe anyone an explanation. Sometimes confinement is a way of ordering an attitude adjustment. My baby daughter went through that. We all did. Thank you, James. Our buddy Dave, normally reporting from the blind, as he puts it, says, as you know, my beloved ex-wife Christine suffers from manic depression. She was also poisoned with PCP while in the Army. Her mental health has been tenuous at best until she got the care she needs. It took us nearly 10 years to prove to the VA that it was a service-connected disability. I suffer from major depression. It's recurrent. It's chronic. And yes, in the last 5 years, I've attempted suicide once and seriously thought about it twice a few weeks ago. A few weeks ago, I had to voluntarily check myself into the hospital to get on medication. I have only one bit of advice. If they have an on-site medical unit in the jail, see if you can get him transferred to that unit for his protection. Most of all, you and Agnes protect yourselves. You can't help your son if you didn't take care of yourself and your safety. Thank you, Dave. Thank you. And it took us all day to find that out, but yeah, tomorrow, step two is to talk to the medical unit there in the jail for what it is. And so tomorrow will probably be no better than today. But, you know, if one has read one's Voltaire, one knows via Candide that we live in the best of all possible worlds. And while there is, of course, a ton of news stories to go into, I saw one earlier today that just jumped out at me. It was over on Vice. And it has absolutely nothing to do with politics unless there's some as-yet undetermined political force that either glues the stars together or flings them apart. In times like this, you look to stories like this because it really does give you a sense of perspective. I remember, this is going to be a little odd, but I was a kid when I found out that the sun would burn out in 4 billion years. Now, a 6 or 7 year old has no real conception of billion of anything, and frankly, neither do adults. Our minds can fathom only so much volume of numbers. But the nearest galaxy to our own is Andromeda, the Andromeda Galaxy. And it turns out that scientists have discovered that in about 4 billion years, that same amount of time it's going to take the sun to burn out, that the Andromeda Galaxy is going to swallow this one. The Vice headline refers to it as, "A nearby cannibal galaxy is going to eat the Milky Way, scientists say." Stand by, please. So even if the sun doesn't burn out, our galaxy gets swallowed, and even if we're out on what, well, with the luck we have on this planet, the spiral arm of the Milky Way that we're on will be the first into the gaping hell maw of the Andromeda Galaxy. That's me, Bob Kincaid, little ray of sunshine. The whole story was published in the journal Nature today. An Australian researcher and an astronomer named Dougal Mackey said it offers an insight into the assembly history of our nearest large neighbor, and I found out that there's something out there called archaeoastronomy, trying to reconstruct the universe of the past. Oddly enough, James's thought by email was the first thing that I thought of as well, because reading the, you got to understand, I read this earlier in the day when things were not going particularly well. So much for global warming. And James says the same. See, global warming ain't the problem. We're all going to freeze to death. Odd, then, that a poet said it better than anybody else. I think it was Robert Frost who said, "Some say the world will end in fire, some say in ice." And took it from there when the astronomers hadn't even gotten there yet, I don't think. The whole thing was discovered by the Pan Andromeda Archaeological Survey, which curiously spells pandas, and it's run by the Canada-France-Hawaii Telescope on the summit of Mauna Kea in Hawaii. Apparently, this is also Darwinian, too, because they identified that the Milky Way is also a galaxy eater. We've eaten other galaxies. So, you know, it's just that we're not that high up on the galactic food chain, and there's a bigger galaxy that's going to eat ours. Oh, well. That's 4 billion years ago. Or 4 billion years from now. And given the current pace, of our present news cycle, well, God only knows. Who knows? Maybe the means by which the Andromeda Galaxy gobbles us up will prove to be by snakes and alligators, because that's out there. I said I wasn't as glued to the news cycle as I ordinarily am. I didn't say I was entirely disconnected from the news cycle. I pointed the story out to Agnes earlier, and I said, son of a gun. Sharks with frickin' laser beams. We've got President Dr. Evil. As Randy points out, the Earth, too, supposedly has a nuclear core, and it is capable of burning out long before the sun. You know, Randy, my little ray of sunshine nature is rubbing off on you. Jack in Shreveport asks, but what happens when galaxies poop? Well, you know, if you eat, you got it, but that's probably on the other side of the black hole, and there's, you know, for all we know, this universe is a skid mark in some other universe's underwear. Well, there went dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. They'll have that. But no, we've got President Dr. Evil. And the more interesting aspect of that story is that apparently the reporters Donald Trump wanted sharks and snakes with moats and spikes on the wall to pierce the skin of migrants trying to climb across it, and wanted people to take and wanted our oath sworn officers to shoot migrants in the leg to slow them down. That was all reported by the New York Times, but it wasn't, it was reported as a news story, yes, but it was not reported when it happened, because these things go back to like March and May of this year. And from what it looks like, the reporters kind of sat on these little tidbits pending the publication of their book, because even the well-being of the Republic is subject to the capitalistic needs of the people who belong to the only profession that is actually mentioned in the Constitution, namely journalism. Man, oh man, oh man. I guess on the one hand it's like, oh, well, turns out Dr. Evil's president of the United States. How does that change things? And maybe it doesn't. If you're part of this community, we report the madness every blessed day and have talked among ourselves about the fact that even though there are other things that deserve our attention, we wind up being drawn as though toward the event horizon of a neutron star or a black hole, back to the madness of the guy in the White House. And it seems that the nearer we are drawn to that event horizon, the faster we spin. And it's dizzying. Anybody who's ever gotten sick on the tilt-a-whirl knows what I'm talking about. Man, I'm really giving dinner in the Eastern Time Zone a run for its money. Sorry, Reverbo. But still, you see sharks and snakes and you go, really? Because we're not quite numb to the ability to be surprised. And as bad and as awful and as evil and as unutterably stupid as Donald Trump is, I guess it's a healthy thing for us that we see a story like that, even though maybe it should have been reported months ago instead of being saved for a profit-generating book. And we still retain the ability to say, son of a gun, really? Man, he's worse off than we thought. Obligatory Star Trek reference from Deep Space Nine. Lee in New York says, collapse of the universe was a predicted event where the universe stopped expanding and collapsed in on itself and thus ceased to exist. According to Jack, our universe will collapse in on itself sometime between the next 60 to 70 trillion years because it contains too much matter to keep expanding. According to Jack, a massive spherical grid of subspace field generators could be used to manipulate subspace to reduce the mass of the universe and change the cosmological constant. This would avert the collapse. That's Deep Space Nine, the episode called Chrysalis. Do you suppose there's an alternative universe where Donald Trump is just a guy whose brain doesn't work very well, and he just works there down at the bakery and carries the trays from the oven to the cooling rack and back to the and then puts more loaves in the oven? And that's to say, and that's not to cast an aspersion on bakers, but I need to believe in that universe, and I don't believe in much. But he went right off the deep end today. Today we were visited by the Finns. And I know we have listeners in Finland, so hi. He was hosting the Finnish Prime Minister, and decided to really let his freak flag fly. The president of Finland, who, bless his heart, sat there right next to Trump as he got today he wasn't orange, he went red. He went from red to purple. He went into a screaming purple-faced rage. But along the way, the president of Finland, Sauli Niinistö, don't know quite what to do with the umlaut over that O, Niinistö. He threw a little shade Trump's way.
Ladies and gentlemen, before meeting, I had some spare time, so I visited a couple of museums here: Museum of American History, Museum of American. African history, and Museum of American Indian History. And in addition to that, I had a possibility of attending ceremony in Arlington. Mr. President, you have here a great democracy. Keep it going on.
Nice. You have a great democracy. Keep it going. Well, that was about as good as it got. At one point in time, someone asked the Finnish president a question, and Trump said, I'll answer that. And along the way, also today, he became obsessed with men's underwear. You heard that right. He decided to try to compare Adam Schiff, who he really, really hates now, with Mike Pompeo. You know, he graduated first in his class at West Point. Sorry. Trump compared Schiff to Pompeo. That guy couldn't carry his blank strap. So, dipshit Donnie thinks that it's not okay to say jock strap? Wait a minute. I can't. I don't, what? And this in the presence of the president of Finland. Well, to Nitwit Nero's credit, he didn't offer to buy Finland today or throw a temper tantrum over not being able to. So we take our little victories where we can find them. At one point, someone asked him, some Republicans are concerned about threats against the whistleblower. I don't care. I think a whistleblower should be protected if the whistleblower is legitimate. If. Well, see, the thing is, we've already had a finding that the whistleblower is legitimate. And by the way, kudos to the president of Finland for taking time out of his trip to make a special point of visiting the Museum of the American Indian. I mean that sincerely. Subject line, red-faced Trump. Well, it is autumn, Bob. Leaves got to change, and if the impeachment and conviction gods are with us, maybe he'll fall too. Oh, it was pure 200-proof lunacy. And the story about the snakes and the shooting people in the legs, that was an obscenity-laden tirade, too. And, of course, there was a series of rage tweets earlier today. The do-nothing Democrats. Now, remember, he wouldn't say jockstrap, but this he tweets. The do-nothing Democrats should be focused on building up our country, not wasting everyone's time and energy on bullshit, which is what they've been doing ever since I got overwhelmingly elected in 2016, 223 to 306. Dumb fucker can't even get the numbers right. You put the winning number first, stupid. Get a better candidate this time. You'll need it. Overwhelmingly elected by losing by 3 million votes. Ah, well, that explains it. Lee in New York says, jockstrap, Donnie never was allowed to hang out with jocks and never learned anything about them. That's why he can't say it. And he says, blank strap. I don't know. Maybe Melanoma said to him, darling, in old country, jock is very dirty word. Steve in New York, the Finnish president. What a contrast. The Finnish president goes to museums in Arlington. The American president compares a sitting representative to a jock, I mean blank, strap. Steve notes further, I've read some Dr. Brian Greene, string theorist. In one of the books, he discusses whether the universe is infinite or finite. According to what he said, scientists debate this. I, for one, hope that the universe is not infinite. If it, in fact, is infinite, there are an infinite number of... Oh, my Jesus, you just had to do that, didn't you? Donald Trump's. That means that there's also a universe where there are infinite monkeys typing at infinite typewriters, and that one of them's Donald Trump. On the other hand, Scott in San Diego says, alternative universe for Trump? The hell with that, I'd settle for him to be wished away to some distant cornfield. You're a bad man. You're a very bad man. Boop! But he really did get all red and purpley in the face today. And it was the thing with... I know we say, oh, this was bizarre, that was bizarre. Let's go back to the theorem we formulated last week. No matter how bizarre yesterday was, today is going to be weirder. And no matter how bizarre today is, tomorrow will be weirder still. So now, and here's the part that you've got to sort this out as to which way you feel about it. My default position is to take anything that Donald Trump is saying and assume that it is born of the fact that he is dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass. And so if that's the case, then the fit that he's been throwing about the smart-ass comment, and it was smart-ass. We can be that candid about it. When Adam Schiff said, and then he said, I'm only going to tell you seven times, so I want you to listen. Nice little country you've got there. Be ashamed if something happened to it. Well, he was mocking Donald Trump. And, you know, we've talked in the past about one of the what we think will be one of the more effective strategies for dealing with him being to mock him relentlessly. Well, Schiff was doing exactly that. He mocked him. But instead of recognizing that he was being mocked, Nitwit Nero has decided to... Well, that's for us to decide. Does he just not realize he's being mocked? Or is this a strategy? And based on the fact that it's that the hardcore maggots from the Congress and the Senate are behaving as are following his lead, I think it's actually a calculated strategy to say that Adam Schiff told a lie. He said that he was quoting me and he wasn't really quoting me. I never said those things. It was a perfect phone call. In other words, the President of the United States is completely unable to understand the finer points of satire and parody, which, in a way, has an antecedent. We were talking about it the other night on the program. That night at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, when Barack Obama mocked him some more, and when he thought he had mocked him enough, he mocked him a little bit more. So I guess going back to that night when he just had to sit there and take it, thinking that word that he learned from his Klansman father and having it just play over and over and over inside the sick and twisted spaces of where whatever comprises his mind used to be, I guess Donald Trump really thought that Barack Obama thought that Trump was out there trying to find out about Tupac and Biggie. He actually made it up. Should be criminal. It should be treasonous. He made it up. Every word of it made up and read to Congress as though I said it. And I will tell you what, he should be forced to resign from Congress. Adam Schiff, he's a lowlife. He should be forced to resign. He should resign from office in disgrace. And they should look at him for treason because he's making up the words of the President of the United States. That wasn't a tweet. That was said out loud with his face getting redder and redder and redder. Stoke the stroke. Jimmy, in the Great Northwest, says, POTUS45, somebody out there, please stop the fool from embarrassing us to the world when he airs his dirty laundry sitting next to foreign leaders. Well, Jimmy, that's what the 25th Amendment's for, but we've got a bunch of toadies and lickspittles who have no concern for or reverence for the oaths of office that they took. Otherwise, that section 4 of the 25th Amendment letter would have been written a long, long time ago. No doot about it. Thank you very kindly to Sharon. Bruce's challenge just went down to 120 to go. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you very kindly. Under the present circumstances, it's just critical. So it wasn't enough to sit there and bear his idiotic, petty, ignorant jealousies about not so much jealousies, but his ire about Adam Schiff, when anybody with two functioning brain cells to rub together knows that what Schiff was doing was mocking him when he desperately deserves to be mocked. No, there's a motion for censure that has been offered up in the House of Representatives. A motion for censure against Adam Schiff for deliberately misquoting the president and lying to the people of the United States. If you've got the stomach for it, you can find the video of this and watch it at your leisure. I don't recommend it. Because the irony is that a serial liar who's told more than 12,000 of them, the idea that he would fulminate and pontificate and lose whatever it is that remains of his mind over a smart-ass remark from a guy who is orders of magnitude smarter than he, yeah, that's hard to fathom. But the whole thing was an exercise in... Well, it says more about the people who won't sign the 25th Amendment letter than it says about Trump, in a way. Because he put full madness on display. Pick any president you want, from Washington all the way to Obama. Put the words he said today in those presidents' mouths. Okay, no, let's not start with Washington. Let's start with LBJ, because that's when the 25th Amendment was ratified. From LBJ to Obama, any president that speaks or spoke the words that Donald Trump spoke today, the 25th Amendment letter would have gone out within minutes. Take, for instance, his soliloquy about Nancy Pelosi. Now, we all know that when he called in desperation Nancy Pelosi and says, "Can't we make a deal to try to put off all this impeachment stuff? Can't we make a deal about the whistleblower?" And she said, "Sure. You just tell the people who work for you to follow the law of the people of the United States and respond to the subpoenas that they get." In other words, she put it right, but she dunked on him. He was standing there in the low post like a fire plug, and she just walked up him like a ladder and stuffed the ball through the hoop. But that's not how it exists in his thin gray settlings that slosh about betwixt his ears and pass for brains. When Nancy Pelosi, who worked a day early, Nancy Pelosi called for essentially impeachment. Let's impeach the president before she saw the transcript. And this is a word-for-word transcript of the conversation. That's a lie. More on that later. Taken by talented stenographers. When she saw that, I heard she went crazy. She said, "We can't impeach him with this conversation. That's a great conversation." I don't think there's one, I mean, okay, there's one thing true in there. There is a human being on planet Earth named Nancy Pelosi. That's the only true statement. The rest of it is a bizarre bird's nest of lies. Becky, let me smash. Holy crap. Okay, more on the talented stenographers. Well, Senator Angus King, the independent from Maine, the man who, among other things, quotes classical literature and Shakespeare in the Senate, meaning that he's actually been exposed to it and appreciates it. Angus King said today that about an Rosemary Woods, white courtesy phone. Rosemary Woods, white courtesy phone. Angus King said today that based on a reconstruction done by he and his staff, and this was in an interview last night with Anderson Cooper, he said there's about 20 minutes missing of the phone call that there was allegedly detailed by the White House in that rough memorandum. There is no transcript per se. The full transcript has never been released. But using the memo, they said that the memo only covers about a third of what that phone call would have been, and that two-thirds of the phone call are still unaccounted for. In particular, he told Anderson Cooper, I had two staff members from my office the other day read it aloud, and we timed it. They read it in normal speaking pace. It took them 10 minutes and 40 seconds. The phone call was 30 minutes. Now, we don't know what is missing. And he acknowledged that some of it may have been translators. You know, there's a lag when translators translate. But that probably still doesn't make up for the amount of time involved. Now, he said that it was done at a normal speaking pace. What he needed was somebody there who could talk like Donald Trump and see if it was still too short. King himself is not a fire-breathing impeachment advocate, but he said that this is why I think there has to be an inquiry to get to the facts surrounding this, what it looks like, at least, an attempted transaction. Among other things, he warned against throwing the word treason around. To throw it around in the situation, and like I said, this is a guy who quotes Shakespeare and classical literature. To throw it around in this situation, the problem is the president feels that he is the state, you know, like Louis XIV. L'état, c'est moi. Only problem is, you know, Louis XIV was known as the Sun King. Donald Trump is the son of a bitch king. But it's clear that he does think of himself as something beyond the President of the United States. He thinks that it is treasonous to criticize him or to mock him. Oh, and today in the meltdown, he also said, they said President Trump started screaming, ranting, raving that on the southern border, where we are right now building a tremendous wall, it is unbelievable what is going up. Army engineers, we're doing a lot. We'll soon have over 100 miles under construction completed, and we'll end up with 400 or 500 miles. That I wanted not a wall, but I wanted a moat, whatever it is, a moat. And in the moat, I wanted alligators and snakes. And I wanted the wall to be a fence, and I wanted it to be electrified, and I wanted sharp spikes at the top so it would go piercing through their skin, is somewhat the way they said it, skin-piercing spikes. But I want the whole wall to be electrocuted, and sir, you never said that. They came to me, the comms people yesterday, and they said, did you say this? I said, why are you asking that stupid question? Because the fake news media is saying that you said this in a book. That shit's exhausting. X damn exhausting. Now, if you want to perform a literary experiment, and we've done this from time to time, I think, we've done this. What you do is you go and you take proud ownership of a book by William Faulkner. Many William Faulkner books will do, but in particular, As I Lay Dying works, and so does Faulkner's The Sound and the Fury. Just so happens that I have... Yeah, that's right. Flavio says, Trump, après moi, le déluge. The only problem is that would involve him having even the vaguest idea of French, which he doesn't. French fries, French toast. This is from The Sound and the Fury, April 7th, 1928 is the name of the chapter. I'm going to read it in Trump's voice, just as a literary and, I guess, psychosocial experiment. Through the fence, between the curling flower spaces, I could see them hitting. They were coming toward where the flag was, and I went along the fence. Luster was hunting in the grass by the flower tree. They took the flag out, and they were hitting. Then they put the flag back, and they went to the table, and he hit, and the other hit. Then they went on, and I went along the fence. Luster came away from the flower tree, and we went along the fence, and they stopped, and we stopped, and I looked through the fence while Luster was hunting in the grass. Here, Caddy, he hit. They went away across the pasture. I held to the fence and watched them going away. They were hitting little across the pasture. I went back along the fence to where the flag was. It flapped on the bright grass and the trees. It was red, flapping on the pasture. Then there was a bird slanting and tilting on it. Luster threw. The flag flapped on the bright grass and the trees. I held to the fence. We went along the fence and came to the garden fence where our shadows were. My shadow was higher than Luster's on the fence. We came to the broken place and went through it. That is the portion of the book that is narrated by one of Faulkner's most famous characters, Benji. And Benji is described in the language of the day, an idiot. That's why the name of the book is The Sound and the Fury. A tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. Wow. The President of the United States is a character directly out of a novel by William Faulkner, narrated in part by an idiot. You'll notice there's a lot of talk in there about a fence. They said that I wanted not a wall, but I wanted a moat, whatever it is, a moat, and in the moat, I wanted alligators and snakes, and I wanted the wall to be a fence, and I wanted to be electrified, and I want sharp spikes at the top, so it would go piercing through their skin, in somewhat the way they said it, skin-piercing spikes. But I want that whole wall to be electrocuted. You'll pardon me if my head is spinning just a little bit. Had the present circumstances not obtained, my head would be spinning. Back to the transcript. Steve in New York says, as I recall, there are a number of ellipses in the transcript, dot, dot, dot. The damn thing shows that there are missing words. Subject line, ha 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 ha, from Darlene in Connecticut. This country has a high threshold for sadistic pain, ignorance, and stupidity. Impeachment? Look what it took just to begin an inquiry. Invoking the 25th? Not on your life. We've been conditioned well, says Darlene, and well we have been. Jack in Shreveport, Trump's reading. So there's some kind of Faulkner to C-Spot run translator? Yeah, you just heard it, Jack. And you can do it with anything he says. The only difference being that, well, Faulkner's a work of fiction, and the Benji passage and things like As I Lay Dying show his manifest genius. On the other hand, this was said in public during an official state visit by the president of an allied foreign nation. Brother Deacon Asa adds, don't forget, Bob, the stupid motherfucker's so dim, he probably thinks impeachment is when they hog time and stuff peaches up his ass. Probably. Trump worse than Nixon, asks Scott in San Diego. You bet. Nixon only managed an 18.5-minute gap in a Watergate tape. Trump's Ukraine conversation apparently has a 20-minute gap. Trump's even worse than LBJ if you use the credibility gap metric. Lyndon Johnson was capable of a whopper every now and then, while Trump broke the goddamn meter during his first year in office. Year? Week? We worked that out the other day. We were 375 lies per month. And you divide that by 28. Lyndon Johnson on his best day couldn't do that. Richard Nixon on his worst best day couldn't do that. Jack says, oh, now I get it. And let's go back to some emails regarding what I talked about at the beginning of the program. Oh, and by the way, thank you to an anonymous donor, an anonymous contributor. Day late because of me, but Bruce's memorial challenge has been met. Thank you so very much. It is a tremendous help. Not to jump pogo stick up onto the cross or anything, but there are just some things I don't need to be worrying about right now. Or would, you know, make things much worse worrying about them. James in Illinois, alternate universe Don. I should probably never have even mentioned that concept. I think the other Don would be different in a number of ways if it weren't for the unearned wealth and sense of privilege. It's quite possible that many of his physical features would be altered. Notice that his mouth looks relatively normal until he speaks. Then his lips purse and his lips resemble an anus. A cat's ass, as a matter of fact. I wish I knew what causes that. I've never seen another human with that feature, at least to that degree. I suspect it's a combination of genetics, it's nurture and nature. That cat's ass mouth comes from the McLeods. There can be only one. Mary McLeod, who illegally immigrated to the United States, ostensibly on vacation, on holiday, and then found work as a maid until she could find work on her back for Fred Trump, who then married her, because there just weren't a lot of women out there wanting to marry a future Klansman. Some family he comes from. Note coming in from Lady B. You became a de facto therapist for far too many of us. We write you, call you, and take advantage of your patience and good graces. You've become like a family member, whether you wanted to or not, and for that we are very, very grateful. Some people are just born to extend their compassion to others. It is simply what they do, but what happens when they don't feel like they have enough compassion left to take care of their own family, much less themselves? If you ever want or need to walk away for a while, you should. You don't owe us anything. You give enough as it is, getting this show up 5 days a week and preparing for it during the other two. But you're just a man, a flesh and blood human with a flesh and blood family that needs you just as much as we need you. You serve your role as a husband and father. You do your job not just out of duty, but love. And my God, there's no finer a human being than a dad who deeply loves his kids. You also have a need for your thoughts and feelings to be heard. You're compelled to tell us and educate us on how important it is to know about our world. How no matter how dire our circumstances may seem, there is always hope. There's always a better way. There's always a new day. So know this, we hear you. You're validated. You're loved. You are fulfilling your life's purpose just by being the gifted, bright, and beautiful soul you are. You are awake and breathing. And we are grateful. Don't falter. Do what you need to do to keep your sanity. Take your time. You've touched too many lives to think you haven't fulfilled your purpose. Wake up knowing love is all around you. And no matter what happens, you spoke to our hearts, fed our minds, and touched our souls. Always, 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 Bob, you've got the Horn family love. And it's all for you. Signed, Lady B. Lady B so often knows exactly what to say. And even though, and I don't know how to reconcile it, you know, I've heard Tara Devlin over on Tara Buster, dear friend, dear friend, talk about her own struggles with addiction. And she doesn't hide from it. We've talked about it in private, and she says, you know, I talk about it because it keeps me honest. And she does not hesitate or shy away from telling about every part of it. And I know based on her story that, you know, it is possible to recover from, to be in recovery from this stuff and to deal with one's own illnesses and still, and you know, her thing was addiction, is addiction. And that's a component of what goes on in this situation. But it's not all of it. But it serves, as you all do, who share so candidly, as an inspiration and a light in the darkness to us and a way forward. And I don't know how a situation where it feels like someone just can't be in your house anymore works out for the best. And it's moments like this you wish you were a praying person. But I've never seen prayer help a situation like this. I've never seen prayer do much of anything at all. Certainly, if prayer were real, we'd have had a hell of a lot less funerals by now from shot-up movie theaters and shopping parking lots and Walmarts and Friday night revelers and Saturday night revelers and university students and little children in school. If prayer worked, it's prayer meeting Wednesday, by the way. Oh, how dare you, Bob, question the ways of the Almighty? Mighty mysterious are the ways of the, oh, stop it. So there's no praying. There's just an abiding sense of grief and sadness. And so what's left? Hope?
Yeah, there's an old saying here in the hills, you know, hope in one hand and shit in the other and see which one fills up first. No, hope won't suffice either. Only persistence and dogged dedication. And that's whether it's a family crisis or a nation in crisis. One can often be a microcosm of the other. I think often about that line from Anna Karenina, where Tolstoy, especially in the last few days, where Tolstoy says that all happy families are happy in the same way, but every unhappy family is unhappy differently. And I think Tolstoy was kind of right. But by the same token, even though there are differences, we can help each other by recognizing the commonality of it all. One of the benefits to not believing in some pie in the sky afterlife is that you don't get a pass on getting it right now. This is no dress rehearsal. Oh, by the way, there's something new every day. This is another one Monday night when we were talking, we discussed the fact that there's another whistleblower out there, this time over at the IRS. Well, now we found out that over at the House Oversight Committee, where Elijah Cummings is chairman, who has said he is going to subpoena White House officials and White House documents because he's written letters to them asking politely for their cooperation, and they didn't even bother to respond. Well, Politico reports that both a trade association and a foreign government booked a whole bunch of rooms at Trump properties. Nothing new in that, I guess. They booked a whole bunch of rooms at Trump properties, but here's what makes it novel. They never showed up. And as Jerry Connolly of Virginia, who's a member of the Oversight Committee, and he chairs the subcommittee that has jurisdiction over that tacky hotel in D.C., he said, now we're looking at near raw bribery. That was the risk from day one, foreign governments and others trying to seek favor because we know Trump pays attention to this. And, of course, it's even more profitable if they book your rooms in your tacky-ass bedbug-ridden hotels, your flea bags, your dump, and then they don't show. Because it's obvious that they're just trying to put money in his pocket. Ro Khanna of California, also on the Oversight Committee, said, if true, at a minimum, this suggests there is a culture of corruption that the administration has created. There's a sense that to curry favor, you have to engage in pay-to-play. That's exactly what the American people hate about Washington. Jesus. It is. I mean, that's just out in the open.
Don't worry about it, Mr. Trump. We're just going to rent some hotel rooms and not sleep in them. You won't even have to change the sheets. We won't even disturb the bed bugs.
That's why the emoluments clause is there. Meanwhile, today over at Huffington Post, former Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko, he admitted that he had a discussion with Rudy Giuliani back in 2017 about what? Financial investments. Poroshenko does say that, wow, they didn't discuss any Ukrainian commercial enterprises. And he said, we definitely do not want to be involved in the political process inside the United States. So lo and behold, he was Giuliani was doing the very thing he's accused Joe Biden and Hunter Biden of doing. Oops. But that'll always be the case. But in order to at least try to be a good faith information presenter of information, sharer of it, discusser of it. Well, I went rooting around for the biographical facts on Hunter Biden. And I did dig far enough to know to learn that the Ukraine stuff and him getting on the Burisma board did make some ethics watchdogs perk up their pink little ears when it happened. But it wasn't done at the urging or behest of Joe Biden. The prosecutor that Joe Biden insisted be fired was fired because he wasn't doing his job. He wasn't investigating things that he should have been investigating, including Burisma. Had Joe Biden wanted to protect Hunter, assuming Hunter did anything wrong, he would not have pressed for the prosecutor to be canned because the prosecutor was staying away from Burisma. And people said, you know, well, why did they offer him that job? Well, it's the world that Hunter Biden was trying to move into. I think, oh gosh, he's 7 years younger than me. He's 49. And he had a privileged education, a privileged undergraduate college experience, got into Georgetown Law and then transferred to Harvard. And I'm sure this will come as no surprise, but people who graduate from Harvard Law get doors open for them just because of the name that's on their law degree. You are deemed to be better at what you do just by virtue of having Harvard on your resume or curriculum vitae. It ain't necessarily true. Look at Don McGahn. Don McGahn didn't come out of some highfalutin law school, and he managed to be so talented that he could keep the President of the United States from committing perjury in front of Robert Mueller. But the cachet of Harvard or Yale or Stanford, and to a lesser degree Michigan and Virginia, Duke, Penn, they carry a tremendous amount of weight, and when you walk out of there with the degree, you know, they say a law degree is a license to print money. Well, think of it, okay, it's a license to print money on a Johannes Gutenberg ancient style printing press. But when you get the Harvard law degree, it's a license to print money on one of those high speed printers with all the rollers and shit that cranks out newspapers every day. And that is why Burisma wanted him. One vice president is not enough leverage. But by God, if you've got that Harvard law degree, you've got your individual toe hairs have connections to money. And that's all there is to that. So we know that Nitwit Nero is trying to whip his followers up into a white, and I do mean white, hot fury. What are the lick spittles who follow him and carry his water in the media doing? Well, our dear friend Jude says of this particular clip, they spew out what they have housed within themselves. And apparently the inside of this creepy character named Josh Bernstein, we've heard from him before. He's the guy who advocates killing cops if cops try to confiscate anyone's firearms. He has suggested that various and sundry Democrats be extrajudicially murdered. And still, none of those humorless people with the skinny black ties and the black suits and the white shirts who talk from time to time to their wrists or the bottoms of their shoes have seen fit to have a conversation with him. Not even for this.
These people are the lowest forms of life on earth. They are lower than pond scum. They are the most disgusting, vile pieces of jackrabbit crap you could possibly imagine. I want to keep this PG, folks.
Yeah, okay. He's gonna advocate for people to be tortured and killed, but he's going to do it in a PG fashion by referring to jackrabbit crap. The people that he's talking about being lower than pond scum, by the way, pond scum sits on top of the pond, not at the bottom of the pond. You fucking idiot. This is not a PG program. He's talking about the people who are leading the inquiry into whether or not to impeach the Orange God Emperor for his manifest and plainly obvious extra-constitutional activities, otherwise known as impeachable offenses.
I would rip out their fingernails and their toenails one by one and then waterboard them in front of their families, because that's what these pieces of crap deserve for what they are trying to do to this president. These scumbags! That's what they are. They're dirtbags, they're scumbags, and they are the worst people on the planet Earth.
Notice that the problem with this little not particularly screwed down diatribe, we try to come up with clever ways to describe the awful and nefarious people who are trying to destroy constitutional governance. But when we come up with clever things like Nitwit Nero or Mar-a-Lago Mussolini or Tangerine Tiberius or Chlamydia Claudius, we tie that to a description of the awful things that they have done. this guy is pretty much just ranting because he doesn't like the fact that they're investigating Donald Trump. Fail.
And I hope every single one of them pays for what they are doing, how they are destroying the fabric of this country. We are turning into the divided states of America because of ass clowns like these Democrats. And as I said, and I'll say again, the Democratic Party, it's no longer, folks, about differences in policies. It used to be Republicans and Democrats, there was a difference in policies. No. Now it's about life or death. This is a terrorist organization. The Democratic Party should be designated as a terrorist organization. Now,
funny. The Democratic Party hasn't shot up any synagogues lately. The Democratic Party hasn't shot up any Walmarts, any gay nightclubs. The Democratic Party hasn't shot up the rope line waiting to get into a bar in Dayton, Ohio. They haven't shot up a school in Connecticut. But somehow the Democratic Party, according to this wee little stochastic terrorist, somehow is a terrorist organization. Sure. Why not? But what do you expect from a guy who says the following about Christine Blasey Ford?
Christine Blasey Ford, I said at the time that she was likely the aggressor. Here's what probably happened. Brett Kavanaugh and her knew each other when they were younger. She liked Brett Kavanaugh. She had a crush on him, whatever, right? He said, not a chance, pimple face. Ain't gonna happen. And she didn't like that, so she got mad. She never got a revenge.
This Josh Bernstein should be looked into for treason. He's saying things that Christine Blasey Ford said that she obviously never said.
See how it works? That's what makes me think that it's not a matter of him not understanding satire. It's a matter of him trying to weaponize the fact that he was mocked. It infuriated him just as much as it did, like I said, when Obama mocked him over Tupac and Biggie.
She went and did her own thing, academia, whatever, and then he went to the highest court in the land and she wanted revenge. And if anything happened, which I highly doubt it ever did, she was the aggressor. Now, Right Wing Watch attacked me back then, saying that Josh Bernstein says that Christine Blasey Ford was the aggressor. Well, guess what? Here we are a year later, and I stand by that statement. She's the one that was the floozy. She's the one that went to that all-girls school that literally were man-crazy little soon-to-be whores.
Stay classy, Republicans. Stay classy. So she's a slut for going to an all-girls school, but Brett Kavanaugh is just an upstanding all-American boy who likes to boof and drink beer and goes to an all-boys school run by Jesuits. Same Jesuits who sold slaves down the river in the 19th century. The same Jesuits who used to joke about the fact that Polynesian cultures had no word for homosexuality in their vocabularies until the Jesuits found them. Yeah, those Jesuits. Just saying. Stephen, New York, says he wants to keep it PG? Waterboarding people in front of their children? Yeah, that's family friendly. These people are morally bankrupt and ethically dead.
Okay? You can see the yearbook, all the pictures, all the parties, all the disgusting things that they were doing and saying and dressing like. So they were the aggressors. It was those horny girls at that girls' school that were the aggressors.
I'm just going out on a limb here, but I happen to have video in front of me. And I'm pretty sure Josh Bernstein wouldn't know what to do with a girl if you spotted him naked and a copy of The Joys of Sex. Asa asks, is this Bernstein the same asshole who said the whistleblower is Ben Carson because he heard it was a non-White House official? Jesus Christ. I don't know. We need to source that up, because Brother Deacon Asa shared that with me earlier today, and as bad as the day was, I got a desperately needed giggle, because that actually happened. In particular, what Brother Deacon Asa sent to me earlier, he said, how's this for Titanic intellect, Bob? In response to the announcement to the, and this is, the whistleblower is a non-White House official. Now, you and I, having operating big primate brains, we recognize that that means someone who is not a White House official, right? No, not well. Oh, that, yeah, we recognize that. Not so much the maggots. The whistleblower is a non-White House official. One of the maggots who wants to find and murder the whistleblower said, well, there aren't too many non-white officials in Trump's cabinet, so it must be Ben Carson. And because Asa knew I would be somewhat skeptical about it, he added, I swear to you, I'm not making this up. This was a Twitter maggot. The whistleblower is a non-White House official. Therefore, it has to be Ben Carson. Hey, maybe it was paste and polyester. You know, diamonds and silk.
Against the males. And in particular, Brett Kavanaugh.
Oh, now, time out. I need to back up for that. I want to get the full benefit of that.
At that girls' school that were the aggressors against the males, and in particular, Brett Kavanaugh. And I'll go back on record a year later, and I'll say the same thing, and I'll double, triple, and quadruple down. How do you like that, right-wing watch? But Christine Blasey Ford, or Christine Perjure Fraud, she should be indicted and arrested for perjury and lying to Congress.
I went back because this makes perfect sense. Steve in New York sending along an observation. Someone's an incel. Yeah, I'd say. Jesus Christ. These people. Yeah, what's that? Scott in San Diego. Subject line, Bernstein and horny girls. This poor sap couldn't get laid if you're... If this poor sap couldn't get laid if he were wall-to-wall carpeting. He couldn't get lucky if he hung fuzzy dice from little Mr. Happy. Yeah, I'd say that qualifies as putting dinner right down the drain in both the Central and Mountain time zone, Scott. So the reference to fuzzy dice hanging off little Mr. Happy. Winning. Meanwhile, it ain't all weird white guys. There's always Sandy Rios. And when brother, pastor, minister, doctor, who couldn't put a Band-Aid on without killing somebody, Robert Jeffress of the First Baptist Church in Dallas, said that there was going to be a civil war if we impeach Trump. It got some folks right worked up, including Sandy Rios.
Yep, pretty testy yesterday. And it came up about over this. The president retweeted a tweet by Dr. Jeffress, our friend and pastor from First Baptist Church Dallas, who's an advisor to the president. And the tweet said this: if the Democrats are successful in removing the president from office, which they will never be, it will cause a civil war-like fracture in this nation from which our country will never heal. The president retweeted that quote, but Adam Kinzinger was very offended by this and hit the wall. In fact, he said, I have visited nations ravaged by civil war, President Trump. I have never imagined such a quote to be repeated by a president, tweeted Kinzinger, an Air Force veteran who served as a pilot in Iraq and Afghanistan. This is beyond repugnant. Really?
Now, to be clear, it's Adam Kinzinger, the Republican member of the House from Illinois. That's who she's going to take to task. But God Almighty. Yeah, you heard her. Kind of hard to hear that and not do this. My dear Dr. Jeffress, your words about the impending civil war got my lace pantaloons and hoop skirt positively all in a dither. Dear Dr. Jeffress, I will be praying for you every day as you try to stoke the fires of civil war freedom in our country. I hope you know that I will be eagerly awaiting your return in prayerful nudity. Forever yours, Sandy Rios. I try never to miss an opportunity to fire up the old Ashokan farewell. Jesus. Christians, mind you. Now, this woman broadcasts, I think, over at the American Family Association Radio of Tupelo, Mazzupistan. I had several glorious hours on one of my southern journeys to listen to these goobers live on over-the-air radio. With all due respect to the greats, I don't know if George Carlin or Richard Pryor ever made me laugh harder. They have absolutely no comprehension of the world in which they live. The only thing they comprehend is the world in which they desire to live, and that's the world in which they have all the rights and you have none. And they spend hour after hour after hour on the air blithering and blathering about that great getting up morning when Jesus gonna come back. That is, when they're not doing politics instead, which they do most of the time, in a complete and utter tap dance on the rules for 501c3s that prevent them politicking from the pulpit. Because this is a religious radio network, and it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
I would just say to Congressman Kinzinger, if I ever cared to interview him, which I don't, this is not the first thing he's done that has not won my approval, that's for sure. If he has seen war-torn areas, then he, of all people, should be the watchman on the wall warning. Because I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to understand that the tensions are growing in this country so much so that there is a divide that's setting in that is much like a precursor to any civil unrest. If you read stories, if you know anything about the Civil War, you know this is how it started. Nobody wanted to fight. People didn't really. Maybe I think some of the Southerners were eager. They're the ones that fought the first.
What, Edith, huh? The South didn't want to fight? So they just went into all those state conventions and seceded from the Union and passed articles of secession that said that the primary reason they were leaving is because they were willing to fight to the death to defend slavery? That South?
Wait a minute. So much so that there is a divide that's setting in that is much like a precursor to any civil unrest. If you read stories, if you know anything about the Civil War, you know this is how...
I know lots about the Civil War, but do continue, dumbass.
How it started. Nobody wanted to fight.
Horseshit! That is some seriously ahistorical horse shit. Editorials were published in Southern newspapers, among other things, high Massachusetts horn community, suggesting that a big ditch, interesting that eventually Boston would have a construction project called the Big Dig, but suggesting that a big ditch be dug around the borders of Massachusetts and Massachusetts be floated out to sea. If they didn't want to fight, maybe Robert E. Lee shouldn't have hanged John Brown. If they didn't want to fight, maybe they shouldn't have created the nullification, the asinine evil idea of nullification as far back as the 1820s. Maybe... You think?
People didn't really. Maybe I think some of the Southerners were eager. They're the ones that shot the first shot. They were more warlike then. I mean, men were.
They were more warlike then. Well, I guess the big giveaway on the more warlike then part might have something to do with the fact that they were wearing uniforms, had assembled themselves into an army, got some cannons, and started lobbing shells at the federal fortress in Charleston Harbor. You know, Fort Sumter. I mean, but they didn't really want to fight. They just wanted to murder a few federal troops and just to make their point and go along. And then, you know, it wasn't so much they were marching on Washington, D.C., as they were taking a leisurely stroll toward it, you know, through the countryside there at Manassas. Damnation. And they get away with it. Because nobody listening to them has the necessary knowledge to challenge them, and the ones who do will never have the opportunity. Before everything blew up in the last few days, I'd been diving back into the history of Byzantium. I take some of my respite and rest in history. And I found the following passage. Well, let's let Sandy get done being stupid for a minute.
We're more willing to fight then, no question about it. Still, I don't think the population was crazy about picking up guns and shooting their brothers and sisters who disagreed.
No, they weren't, kinda, sorta. And so as, I think, was it Goering or Goebbels would later say some 75 years later, of course the people don't want war. You have to make them want the war. I'm paraphrasing. And so to this day, you can find, we even bought them one time. Or maybe I just photographed them because I was cheap. Ads ran in newspapers all over the South saying that the Yankees want to turn the Negroes free to rape your daughters and wives and sisters. And your only hope of preventing it is to jine up right now with the Confederate Army.
I mean, that really happened.
And the poor dirt farmers did have to be cajoled away from their plows. Because there were a lot of non-slave-owning Southerners, and in fact, the vast majority of the people who fought the damn war were non-slave-owning white Southerners. And telling them that they were being invaded and that the Negroes were going, because that is the ancient fear, the fear that had been in place, I guess, since 1619, when the first slaves were brought to the colonies. That had been the fear that lay underneath all the nightmares of the entire slaveholding nation. Because they knew the evil that they had done and were doing, and they desperately feared that someday justice might be meted out to them. And by the way, while we're at it, that is still the underlying fear that animates far too many of the white people in this country.
Agreed with them, and yet that's what it led to, because slavery became a source of contention, families were divided, and are your family...
Wait, slavery became a source of contention? Now, this woman is a Christian, and she cannot even say that decent people finally figured out that slavery was evil. Even though long before, 1776, that muggy summer in Philadelphia, even Thomas Jefferson, the slave owner, recognized that it was evil. People who were positively racist, some of them in the North recognized, and in the South. Did you know that the family that went on to form the dynasty that is the New York Times began as a more or less abolitionist newspaper in where? Chattanooga, Tennessee. Recognized that slavery was wrong. But Sandy Rios, the Christian lady, the bleached blonde Christian lady, can't bring herself to say that, because after all, the headquarters of the American Family Association are in Tupelo, Mississippistan.
Families divided over politics right now, over President Trump, over his policies. Are you having problems in your own family, with your own friends, at work? You know that you are. And so for Kinzinger to say that it's outrageous, it's repugnant for Robert Jefferson, the president, to retweet it, that this is setting, this will start a civil war, is not a stretch, and it's certainly not repugnant. It's reality. And so, but this is the kind of people that are representing us, and you wonder why the president seems alone and fighting back. It's because we have people like Adam Kinzinger.
Adam Kinzinger, Republican, is, as far as his party is concerned, a lone voice crying in the wilderness. Trump doesn't seem alone. He's got Jim Shorts Jordan, who turned his back on young men who said they'd been raped. You got Steve Cantaloupe's King and Louis Asparagus Gohmert. You got Kevin McCarthy, who got his ass handed to him on 60 Minutes Sunday night, and is now trying to wage his own personal jihad against Adam Schiff, again, for daring to mock the God Emperor. Oh, and by the way, while we're at it, it would be nice if the Democrats could get a little bit more in your face about that and say, hey, apparently they're idiots. They don't know mockery when they hear it. I was, and let Adam Schiff say it, not parody. Don't use the word parody. Jesus Christ, Congressman Schiff. Do you have any idea how many people in America don't even understand P-A-R-O-D-Y, or for that matter, P-A-R-I-T-Y? Goddamn, say I was making fun of Donald Trump because Donald Trump is a walking joke machine. He makes an ass of himself every time he opens his cat's ass mouth. Say that, Adam Schiff, and you know what? People might actually get it. So I played that ahistorical horse shit there because, like I said, I go wandering off into history books sometimes. And I found some remarks about the Byzantine Empire and one of its oscillations toward decline. And I highlighted the following. Education, and well, let me back up just a little bit. This is a discussion of how the golden age of Justinian, the Emperor Justinian, faded into chaos and near collapse. The result was an increasingly powerful see if you recognize anything in this. The result was an increasingly powerful political force that interfered in the government with unsettling frequency. Pentagon, anyone? In the century after Heraclius' death, no fewer than 8 emperors were put on the throne by the army, hopelessly blurring the line between civil and military authority. Now, the Roman Empire of Rome had gone through similar upheavals. But then, by way of explanation, our author says education, like so much else, was a casualty of the troubled times. The capital still had private tutors in primary and secondary schools, and positions in administration and the army were still open to merit. But for most, there was no time for extensive study in a century of war and disruption. Literacy dwindled, and with it, the quality of civil servants. As the value of education declined, Byzantine culture began to wither and die. Each generation was less educated than the one before, and less able to appreciate the intrinsic value of learning, and before long, the decline had gained its own momentum. How about that? Funny how history doesn't repeat, but most definitely rhymes. Kyle with a note says, wait, is this woman really trying to say that thinking human beings should be kept as property is okay? And that what Trump is doing is just politics? Seems to me she's defending racism as political ideology or some such shit. God damn it, I hate these fucking people. Well, that's what you get when education fails, falters and fails. By the way, going back to what I was saying about Hunter Biden a little bit ago, Darlene noted, John Kerry's stepson, Chris Hines, had advised Biden and another person against participating on the Burisma board as the optics weren't good and he was concerned about the appearance of impropriety. The three were all part of some investment firm, and Biden's and that other guy's participation wound up causing a split in the investment firm. Biden was apparently getting $50,000 a month as a Burisma board member. For what? I remember that the board only met twice a year. But, that stated, how is this any different than what has been done countless times before by the privileged, including Republicans? Here's another question. Is that more corrupt than using daddy's connections as president of the United States to get dozens of contracts and copyrights to sell crap in China, like Princess Ivanka has done? Anybody? Bueller? Really? Adds Darlene, those horny girls, going back to Josh Bernstein. That Kavanaugh apparently couldn't control himself at this all-girls school because of something they were doing to him? That Christine Blasey Ford should be charged with perjury to Congress and arrested? Sounds a little Salem witch trial-y, if you ask me. Well, says Darlene, it is that time of year, after all. Bill in Allentown with a note going back to the topic of conversation at the beginning of the program. Brave grief and sadness. You and Agnes are more brave than you realize. As time goes on, you'll understand it. Almost 20 years ago, I was asked to come over to my parents' house. My brother was having suicidal thoughts, and I was there when my brother got home from school. He was so quiet that I couldn't get a simple conversation out of him, no matter how much I tried. Sometimes the person is very sullen. That was my brother. I hope you, Agnes, and Ferg will be able to get this situation figured out. And so do I. Dear God, so do I. And it is heartening to know that you all reach out because, again, the reason I mention this is because we have all, or so many of us, it seems, have experienced something along these lines. Ferg travails in my experience, writes Billable Rick. Sorry to hear about the problems. Hope you can get someone to help you figure out how to get him much-needed mental health care. I know firsthand what you've been experiencing, although I was able to get help for my then 6-year-old son about 18 years ago and continuing into his teenhood. Just as he started first grade, when the academic demands placed on him began to increase, he displayed hostility toward his teacher and kicked her in the shins when he refused to perform a task asked of him. He inexplicably did a similar thing to his stepfather during a summer trip to the Midwest later that year. We then placed him in an adolescent psych ward at UCLA for a week, where he was diagnosed with autism, depression, and intermittent explosive disorder, and not otherwise specified. Hey, yeah, I recognize that, intermittent explosive disorder. He was placed on medication, which helped for a time. About 6 months later, when his behavior began to regress and he was still in the general education population, we had to place him in the psych ward for another week for a medication adjustment. The time in the psych ward helped the doctors figure out what meds worked best for him, and he was given more supports at school, including being placed in a special day class for special needs children. He remained in the special needs class for about 3 more years when he transferred to a different school. At age 10, he had another meltdown and again needed further hospitalization in a psych ward, again for another week. Before that third hospitalization, which required him to be restrained and sedated and wheeled out on a gurney, he'd holed up in the garage with a saw blade that he brandished and banged against the garage and front doors and dropped the blade only after a police officer trained his revolver on him. I saw his life flash before me in a second. Instead of continuing education in a regular school, starting with seventh grade, we sent him to a residential school outside Redding, California, where he stayed through 10th grade. There, he grew up and was appropriately disciplined and educated by staff members who had experience dealing with difficult special needs youth. Our decisions to hospitalize him and to place him in a residential school were extremely difficult and heartbreaking, but we had no other choice and knew that we couldn't raise him on our own. I suspect that the constant stress that we experienced in raising him from ages 5 to 12 was a major factor in the eventual breakup of our marriage in 2013. After 4 years in the residential school, he returned to the L.A. area and finished his education at a special needs high school not far from where the Horns' beloved Tracy lives, where he was finished second in his graduating class of 20 students. After high school, he had some fits and starts attending community college and sat out a full year to play World of Warcraft. He eventually saw that some of his peers were progressing through college while he was playing online computer games and decided to finally apply himself academically. He attended Pasadena City College for 2 years and just transferred to the University of California, Irvine, late last month, where he's studying computer science and he has a promising future career. The point of this story, Bob, is that no matter how bad things may be and seem with Ferg, there's always hope. We had thought that Brian would be more likely to end up in jail rather than to graduate from college and have a promising career. Fortunately, both his mother and me were mistaken about him. That had to be, those years had to be harrowing, I know. And, you know, we tried during his adolescence. He was subjected to bullying until he subjected others to it. It seemed like his mother was in the school every other day. I even went a few times. Thank you for your compassion. Thank you for your understanding. Thank you for your love. And I'm sure our son doesn't feel like it right now, but he's loved too. And I really do feel like we got, well, I won't say gaslit, but we wound up not getting what we went for when the people who we were talking to knew damned well what was needed. And that is infuriating. And nobody wants to take responsibility. And thank you very kindly to Ernst. Thank you, Ernst, for jumping in on the fundraising this evening. Thank you so very kindly indeed. It is a tremendous help. Clarence with a note. Going back to Hunter Biden. Luck and privilege. I heard Hunter resigned from the U.S. military for a narcotics violation, cocaine. And I read the same thing. And, of course, Beavis or Butthead, whichever one of the Trump boys it was tweeting gleefully about it. Clarence says, I'm retired military, and during my 20 years, I witnessed military members kicked out with bad conduct and dishonorable discharges. The lives of those members are rough for the rest of their days. Employment and credit approval are denied for most of these members. Hunter, on the other hand, is doing all right for a less than honorable dischargee. Oh, there was some salacious shit in what I read. And you take it with a grain of salt because you have no way of independently verifying it. Thank you, Dan. Dan with a note. I'm so sorry. I just tuned in from Mexico. Words can't heal what you or your son or your family are going through. It is obvious you and your family love your son dearly. I wish you all the best resolution possible. We have experienced health care in other countries. Health care in the U.S. is so very lacking in the compassion needed to adequately treat those in need. Best wishes to your entire family. Thank you, Dan. Thank you sincerely. Clarence adds, Bob, my heart goes out to you and Agnes. I'm thinking about the behavior of your son. Do you think the mountaintop removal toxins have had an impact on his health? Well, we know that every one of our children's had health problems out of it. Ferg was born having trouble breathing. When he was newborn, every time he would try to take a breath, his trachea would collapse, and he'd start turning blue until he relaxed and it opened again. It's called endotracheal myalgia. The cartilage didn't form right. We know that respiratory birth defects are common when people have to breathe, when pregnant mothers breathe particulates. Clarence adds, there are studies about environmental toxins in urban cities that are linked to the crime and violent behavior. I understand that lead toxicity has a correlation to violent behavior. I hope your son gets the help that he needs. Stay safe, Bob. Thank you, Clarence. And another aspect, and this is one of those things that parents talk about deep into the night. Agnes had a hard time with preterm labor. It was a struggle to get any of our children born at all. And back then, and we're talking about the middle 90s, they used a drug called brethine. Its chemical name is terbutaline. It's often used in respiratory distress. It acts like a speed because that helps, I guess that helps people with breathing disorders breathe better. But they used it as an off-the-box fashion as a means of depressing preterm labor so that babies would be carried to term. Agnes took that with every one of our children because she was prone to preterm labor. That probably would have resulted in, I don't like the term miscarriage. Spontaneous abortion is the medical term. Well, since then, the use of terbutaline for preterm labor has been black boxed by the FDA. And it is not to be given to mothers-to-be. So we have an abundance of things to look at and wonder about for why things have become the way they are. Just don't know. Thank you, Charlene in Rhode Island. Thank you for jumping in and helping out this evening. That's tremendous. As I said, I will try to be here every night, but I cannot guarantee it for the next couple of weeks. I just don't know. And taking some of this weight off my shoulders is a tremendous, tremendous help. And thank you, Jim. So very sorry, Bob and Agnes. My very best to you both until skies brighten. I appreciate it, Jim. Thank you very, very kindly. And from our friend Lee in New York, subject line sympathy, wishing the best possible outcome to you and Agnes. I'll let you know that I'm estranged from my first child. There is no reconciliation likely. All I know is that we try our best as parents. We do not control the outcome. I know you will go forward. We all do. My best wishes are directed towards your family. Thank you, Lee. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. From the bottom of our hearts, thank you. Well, it's been a 2.5-hour filibobster. Let's go over and check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, hon, how are you? Well, yahoo.
Rethought that one, didn't you?
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, apart from everything else, Mrs. Lincoln, how'd you like to play?
How'd you like to play? Hey! So, yeah, I just, I'm on my way to swim lessons. I stopped to go to my favorite bakery, not to get cake. Why did they have pumpkin latte cake? I just had a sample. I didn't eat the whole cake. It was just.
Well, I'm still. I was in the store the other day. I passed the spam section of the aisle, and I stopped to make sure pumpkin spice spam had not arrived yet. It hadn't, so yeah. I'm okay for another day.
Is that are you sure we're not being punked?
Not according to the article I read.
I don't know. It's some bullshit. But so I was hungry, but I did. You know how you're hungry, but you don't want to eat because I'm going to swim lessons. I'm not gonna.
Wow,
well,
you couldn't get
it.
Well, yeah, you could. You can't eat right now. You can't get in the pool for 2 hours after that.
Right. So I'm wandering around the shopping center and happy hour, and so they have, you know, seared shrimp tacos. I'm like, oh, cool. So, and they weren't even seared. It was just kind of like, almost like a ceviche kind of thing, right?
You know, that's about as far from, you know, like a ceviche is about as far from seared as one shrimp can get.
I know, but, they were cooked, but, you know, they were kind of, but anyway, so they were good. But so they brought me this taco, right? And you know what they had on the tacos, Bob?
Mayonnaise.
Tartar fucking.
Ah, same.
I'm like, yeah. So there was this two white boys sitting next to me, right? And I just made their day because I'm like, what is this white shit on my taco? They hollered. They're like, oh my God, that what you just said is what I needed. And we just went into this whole thing about white stuff. I'm like, if I wanted white, creamy stuff in my mouth, I would still be with a man.
Oh. You know, that's a cold and lousy thing to do in dinner in the Pacific time zone for your own.
I know. But I gotta make you laugh, Bob. I gotta make you laugh. That's what I'm here for. That is, you know, comic relief. Come on now. But it was still good. But then I got the seared whitefish tacos, and I made sure that the tartar sauce wasn't on it. Now those were good. Those were particularly good. But it's just like, you know, I have to eat something because I haven't really eaten this morning.
And just to be clear, you know, recently I made remoulade, and there's a lot of mayonnaise in that.
Lots of mayonnaise.
But the thing is, it's also got stone ground mustard, and it colors up real pretty with paprika and Tony Sacheri's. So it's not quite so mayonnaise.
Isn't it reddish? Isn't it like a reddish?
Yeah, it's depending on how you make it, it runs from pink to red.
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, you know, because, you know, I married the person that is Melanin challenged, I have eaten more mayonnaise in the last 7 years than I have in the first, you know, 46. That part.
Yeah.
So, seriously. That part. So, you know, I have, you know, I've got aioli, which is kind of a mayonnaise based.
You know, we had a fight over aioli a couple of years ago, and you told me no way in hell.
No, it was no way in hell, Bob. It was no way in fucking hell. The emphasis on fucking hell. That part. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I raised my voice. I think I got a little bass in my voice at that point too.
I think you did. You have since been turned to the dark side.
The white side.
Well, okay, yes. I rethought that the minute I said it.
And as soon as she said it, it's like, damn it! Like I said, so how are you doing? And it's like that part. But all kidding aside, you know, knowing and hearing about, I didn't catch the first part of the show. When I tuned in, it was about half an hour into the show because, hey, on my end, I've been dealing with my own little, you know, dealing with white people in crisis, you know, dealing with, my white boy Will and dealing with his crisis. And so I was just like all day to yesterday after. All day yesterday into that, well, actually for the whole month, I have been dealing with this and him in school and not going to class and just kind of fucking everything off. And I finally got him to admit what's going on and woo-woo-woo-woo-woo. So it's just like, what was killing me about, you know, the between what's happening with your son and what's happening with this young man is that this young man has all the resources in the world, and he's I think now he's going to start actually getting, you know, accepting help. And here you are needing help, but can't get it. And that's the thing about California. And
the most frustrating thing is that we wound up getting the exact opposite of what was needed.
Right. And, you know, I think about my own struggles because when I, you know, before I even knew what was going on and before I was, you know, diagnosed as bipolar and that my depression was so severe that I was considered suicidal. I mean, it was because this was long before I became part of the Horn community. I don't know what I said to my mother. My mother, you know, lives in North Carolina, and I called her one day. And whatever I said to her, you know, it triggered, because my mom is a nurse. She's a trained medical professional. And she, what I said, clicked suicide. She was one of the, she called everybody in my family out here in California, pretty in LA, to get over to my house to watch me until she was on the first thing smoking to get out here to me. And the next thing is, I mean, she was here the next day, if not that night. And we were at the mental, we were at the clinic the next day. And the only reason why they didn't put me on a 5150 was because, you know, suicide watch is because, being all around my mom and my family had finally, had kind of gotten me okay. And my mom convinced them that it would be better with me being at home under her watchful eye. But the point being is that there were resources available within hours, not 2 days, not within hours of me presenting as you know, being in trouble.
Well, you know, maybe when a little bit of time has passed, I should probably be jotting it down now just as a recorded recollection. But Agnes and I will try to maybe make some sense of it and write it down. But the thing is, if it's happening to us, it happens. I mean, like I said, we know because it happened to somebody else while we were there.
Right.
And instead of busting ass to get mental health help, they just defaulted to stick them in jail.
Right. I mean, which, and it happens
which,
here
which,
too,
which, because... which to be fair, to be honest, I mean, there's no getting around it. We cooperated with that because we were desperate for something that would resemble help. But then we found out today that we essentially tied our own hands.
Because now he's in the system, right?
Yep. Wrong system.
Wrong system. And I don't know if it's just that I'm fortunate that I live in a state of, I live in California.
Well, no, Tracy, if I could just dare to interrupt for a second, that's the thing. It is, you know, it's not just here. It's not just West Virginia. And I want to be clear, there is some hope in the future that this will be remedied. Just not right now, and all we have to do is survive to get it for him.
Right.
On the other hand,
but it shouldn't be this way, though.
You know, we've spoken in other contexts about the accident of birth, and
that part,
and how lives play out just based upon where a child happens to emerge into the world. And so it is it's absolutely true that there is a sort of and I mean no disrespect by saying this, okay? There is a sort of healthcare apartheid in this country.
Sort of, but it is.
Because if you're born in Georgia, if you're born in Alabama, if you're born in Mississippi, Louisiana, because all of those states don't have the Medicaid expansion, we do. So there is some hope. But if you're a working person in Alabama or Mississippi or any of too many states, you are cursed, not because of anything you did. Not because of who you are, but because of where you are. See, this happens to other families, and if they are of means and access to privilege and power, the way this played out doesn't play out.
No, and like I was saying, this whole thing that I'm dealing with Will right now, and going back and forth with him, his parents they're both doctors, they're both of means, and they're good people. I think I'm finally getting through to him about, we had a really good conversation today, about, him accepting the help and, there's nothing wrong with needing help. It's not a sign of weakness. It's you're not a failure. You just need help because, he's got that thing in his head about, I was told about pulling myself up by my bootstraps. I'm like, baby, that shit is some bullshit. That's a Republican myth. I said, yes, there are people who by their sheer will did make it on their own, woo-da-woo. But I said, the majority of the motherfuckers out there that have made it, they had help. And so don't buy into that bullshit lie, that American myth about that lone wolf, I could make it on my own bullshit. No.
No, it's a lie.
Except help. It's a lie.
Lone wolves don't survive outside the pack. And we are not, there's a reason, because it takes the community, whether it be a wolf pack or a troop of baboons. And remember, we're primates. There are no solitary hunting chimpanzees or gorillas out there. We are primates. We are upper level. I mean, they're our nearest kinfolk on the evolutionary ladder. And none of them live solo.
Nope. That part. And I'm like, people need help. And don't never, ever be ashamed of needing help. I said, the strongest, a true sign of strength, baby, is admitting that you need help and accepting it without shame. That part. So don't you ever be ashamed of needing or accepting help. Don't do it. So, it's like you said, it's the birth lottery. I with everything that, of all my disadvantages, being a black woman, having mental health issues and all sorts of stuff, now, identifying as lesbian within the last 7 years, at least I was born in California. Even when I, didn't have a job or what have you, at least I had access to health care. At least I had access to mental health care. And that saved my life. And, it's
people don't, I don't know how people, I don't know. And another thing that saved my life and kept me, you know, has kept me sane for the last, I don't know how many years I've been listening to you, this show. And, you know, just this community and us looking out for each other. And so when, you know, I found out what was happening with you and your, and Agnes and what's happening with Ferg, it felt as though my son, something was happening with my child because you're my family. I'm closer to you than I am to most of my family. Hell, I like you sometimes more than I like my wife.
Don't. Well, you're on the road, so you're safe.
Yeah, I'm safe. She can't hear me. She's not, and she'll listen to the show, so I'm good. I'm not home. I'm okay. And she, look, I've told her that. She knows, when I get in my moods, or when she gets in hers. So it's like, it's not a friendship, it's a kinship. We're family. And if you hurt, I hurt. And like I said, when I have, you have. We can't do this alone. We cannot. We can't make it. Like you said, we are primates. We can't do shit alone. We are not. There's no fucking thing as, like you said, we can't be in a lone. There's no such thing. Yes, there is such a thing as a lone wolf, but a lone wolf can't survive on its own. As quiet as it's kept, we need each other. And we, you know, so when I pray, you know, my heart aches for you and Agnes, because there was a while ago when Alex was younger, and because he's had his own struggles with depression. And there was a moment there that I almost lost him because of depression. So I know what you're going through.
Well, you do know. And
I do know.
I would be lying if I said I was not frightened. I know Agnes is frightened. We were scared out of our wits yesterday. Because, you know, when you got somebody on top of you yelling, "I will kill you,"
what are you going to do? And it's your child.
Right. And, you know, the answer is not, well, not if I kill you first. That's not the answer.
No.
And all I can do is hope that we can get him safely to a place where he can get care, and that we can stay safe in our own right. Because there is nothing more horrifying than being terrified in your own home. It's one thing to be, we feel it out there. We very seldom go to movies anymore. Yeah, they're expensive, but one of the things that keeps me out of movie theaters is there's a distinctly lower chance of us getting shot watching the telescreen in our bedroom.
That part. I mean, we are now living in a world, and you know how much I love going to the movies.
Oh, yes.
You know, that's my
Tuesdays, donut. If I recall.
Tuesday, $5 movie Tuesday. And then I bought the movie pass from AMC that for $19 a month, I could go see 3 movies a week at AMC across the country. If I came to visit.
My sister has the same deal.
Mm-hmm. So I can go anywhere in the country. If there's an AMC wherever I am, I can go to the movies. But, you know, IMAX, Prime, whatever, doesn't matter. Because I love the movies. But then there's always, I grew up in the hood. So I'm hypervigilant wherever I go, dude. I mean, I always, because of where I grew up, you know, crack wars of the 80s. So I'm always scanning for exits.
I have never had, you know, one of the first things that I had to jump in Jan's ass about when we moved out of my apartment, because my apartment, we were in a security building. So, you know, I didn't, you know, I always locked the doors, but I wasn't really on her ass about locking the doors in the building in our apartment, because it was a security gate, and it was a really good security building, and the gate really locked as soon as you walked in. But, you know, once we moved to Encino, she got that white woman's, you know, false sense of security. And I would, you know, come home and the door would be unlocked. And she'd be, you know, because she works from home. And I'm like, why is the door unlocked? Oh, wait a minute. I'm like, bitch, please. Just because we live in Encino, you know, Nicole Brown Simpson lived in Brentwood. She still wound up dead. You know?
Absolutely.
So it wasn't until the post office down the street got broken in, you know, got robbed at gunpoint. Then she finally started locking the doors during the day. So, but wherever I go, I'm constantly scanning for exits.
Agnes and I had something similar early on in our marriage, because she and I were both involved in professions that involved people getting rather mad at us. And we learned to be, you know, then there's the story I've told about how our wedding was watched through the crosshairs of a rifle scope.
Yeah, that part.
And so, you know, we'd come back to where we lived, and the house would be dark. You know, we'd leave the porch light on or whatever. And before I'd even let her into the house, I'd go through and clear every room.
Because you had to.
With gun in hand. And it was a sickening mm-hmm. feeling. And it was almost, it'll make you ill. A couple of years of that, and I developed, galloping panic disorder. Never had it a day in my life, and floored my ass.
No one should have to live this way, and didn't have to worry about this in your own home because of your child. That's heart wrenching. My mom lived like that with my father. I was, you know, one of the reasons when my mom finally left my father, because my mom was 16 when I was born. And my dad was 18. My father was an asshole. It's no nice way to say it. He beat my mother on a regular basis. And I think I was maybe 3 years old. And one day after a particularly ferocious beating, I asked my mom, and I remember this. You know, there's certain things you remember when you're a baby. Is daddy going to beat me too? Or is daddy going to kill me? Something of the sort. And that's when my mom finally left my father.
Gotta go.
But nobody should. Gotta go. When my baby is asking if her dad is going to hurt her too, what?
Yeah.
No one. To live in fear. And it's not just the physical, but, you know, mental, physical fear is one thing, because at least physical scars you can show. But when it's mental and emotional too, or even worse than that, because you can't show, you know, mental and physical and emotional shit. I think sometimes that's even worse than physical. Because with the physical, at least the bruise is healed. When folks get into your head and into your soul,
yeah, it's a long time ejecting that. I had a note. I had a note from Shorty in L.A. You'll like this.
Ah.
Shorty's a brand new subscriber. Thank you, Shorty. And she says, "Bless me, Horn, for I am late. It has been 1 week since my last words." The horn is my religion. and says, holy crap, I know I missed something horrible just tuning in, so I'm sending all of my love to you and Agnes. I'll find out from the podcast. And then says, now back to my religion, because it's prayer meeting Wednesday. Now back to my religion, a.k.a. the horn. Since my K-12 years of education were at the hands of Catholicism, I wrote the words below in the tempo and cadences I remember from confession. Bless me, horn, for I am late. It has been 1 week since my last words. The horn is my religion, and I'm willingly doing what I can to keep this horn blowing. Thank you, Shorty. That's perfect.
I wonder where Shorty lives in L.A.
Well, we'll probably find out now that you've asked.
Yeah.
I had a note coming from Ron in Raleigh. Truly sorry to hear about your travails with Ferg. Early on, my younger sister had violent mood swings. There was no threat of violence because all her brothers are over 6 feet tall. Oddly enough, once she had her son, the mood swings went away. Hormonal shift, I guess. But you know how we are, just like you with the seared, not really shrimp ceviche. Ron continues and says, anyway, I went to the new Wegmans last night, the grocery store, the brand new grocery store.
The one that he's tormenting you about?
Yeah. The store is 104,000 square feet with 3 cafes. There's a bakery, a fresh seafood station, a pizza bar where they'll cook it on site or you can take your pie home. The cafes are a burger shop, a sandwich shop, and a coffee breakfast bar. The prices are on par with the Harris Teeter and less than Trader Joe's, which is right across the parking lot. I'll let you know how the food is after I give it a taste test. Well, now, I mean, talk about rubbing it in. Wegmans across the street from Trader Joe's. That reminds me. Because no matter how things are, we still are who we are. I found me a new sourdough. And I found it at Kroger's, which would be your Ralph's. And it's called Izio's, I think. Izio's. And they're short little loaves, a little pricey, but here's the thing. It is almost identical to the Trader Joe's sourdough, only smaller slices. I smeared a little bit of butter across it and handed a slice to Agnes and said, this is what I was munching on the way home from D.C. last time that I told you I love so much. And she said, well, I'll just try a taste. And she took a little bite. And the next thing I know, I'm hearing, get more of that when you go back to Kroger's and give me another slice.
Okay, well, remember I sent you a text message earlier or last night or whatever and said that it's so funny when I, you know, because we text off air on occasion and I sent you a picture of my mom, and when you did not respond
I knew
there was something wrong because you didn't come back with something silly, and I'm like, okay, there's something wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I'm eating ibuprofen like M&Ms right now.
I know you are, but on Monday, because I just sometimes kind of sense when my friends need something. So Monday morning, I met my brother for breakfast. And remember I was telling you, because I told you I was going to send you a book. And I didn't get it, and things just kind of work out. I didn't get the chance to get to the post office on Saturday. But on Monday, I went to breakfast with my baby brother at the restaurant I was telling you about the apricot jelly.
Right.
But it's actually pineapple apricot jelly.
Ooh. Jam.
And then I went to Trader Joe's and got... What is that shit called?
Yuzu.
Yuzu. And so then, the book, the apricot pineapple jelly, and that hot sauce that you mainline is on its way via UPS as of on Monday.
Oh, glory. that'll be that apricot pineapple will be 17 shades of wonderful. with a little bit of butter on that warm sourdough.
And it comes in a mason jar.
Oop. Yeah.
Okay. So, and I sent the note, and it is just, and it's just crazy that that went out on Monday. And what happened, and I think the note that I don't actually remember what I wrote, but what I wrote is perfect. I mean, it'll probably kind of help soothe what happened yesterday and what's going on now. But it's just, I mean, that kind of like that divine intervention, because it's just crazy how that happened.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's just crazy that I had so much to do on Saturday that I didn't get a chance to send the book on Saturday, and unexpectedly wound up meeting my brother for having breakfast with my brother on Monday at the restaurant that, you know, I've been talking about sending this jelly from, and of course what I had for breakfast, I had grilled sourdough toast, grilled butter, you know, sourdough yeah. bread buttered on both sides and grilled specifically with that jelly. And when I was having that, when I had that, then I'm like, oh, you know what? Before I go, can you get me a jar of that jelly? Because I got to send it to my homeboy, Bob. And then I said, since I'm sending a little care package, mini care package anyway, I got to go and get him, send him his fix of the damn hot sauce.
I'm very nearly to out. I got loaded up courtesy of Sailor Chick in June, and I mean I go through it. I do go through
it. I know you think this is breakfast shit. I find appalling, but hey, that's you.
Well, when you gotta have it, you gotta have it. And to get yourself do you do
V8 juice? But I'm gonna, it's a good snack.
I dose spicy V8, the bee Jesus out of it with that stuff, and a wedge of lemon, and there's no making me any happier than that. Speaking of shipping, I had completely forgotten about it. I'm all excited now. You know, if we can just get back to being happy.
Like I said, it's the little things.
Yeah. And I ordered months ago, forgot I even ordered it, some concentrated packets, and I didn't know they were coming all the way from Japan, you know, really from Japan, but they did, and they arrived today. These little concentrated packets, tiny little packets, they're liquid, of super concentrated tonkatsu pork bone ramen broth. It's just the broth, no noodles. And one tiny little packet of this stuff makes a liter of ramen broth.
What the fuck? For real?
Yeah. So, you know, when my appetite comes back, I'm going to try it.
You want to hear how I almost punched the white girl in the throat story real quick?
Oh, it'll make my night.
So, you know, your girl had, you know, I think I talked to you about having to buy more than one pair of shoes now for my working. So apparently now you need a pair of shoes just to work out in and a pair of shoes to run in.
Oh, absolutely.
Who fucking knew, you know? Yeah, we had that conversation and then you told me yes. And you also need, if you're going to do trail running or hiking, another fucking pair of shoes. I'm like, you're fucking getting on my nerves. So anywho.
Just trying to help.
I went, whatever. So anywho, on Monday, I went to go buy another, you know, so I had my cross trainers, and now I went to buy a pair of actual running shoes. So I bought the running shoes, you know, with the custom insoles and blah, blah, blah. So I come out to go get into my car, Bob. Bob, I couldn't get into my car. You know why?
No.
Because there's a little red Fiat parked next to, and it's not because they, you know, parked too close and all that. Well, they were, but you know why they were parked too close? Because they, you know, when you go to the store and there's a little space where you return your carts.
Yeah.
Well, this person parked their little red Fiat in that space, because that's not a parking space, Bob.
Gender notwithstanding, I generally refer to that as a dick move.
Dick move. So, of course, now I can't get into my car. And so Jaren's like, baby, just get in on the other side of the car. I'm like, fuck, no, I am not. She's like, well, you know, you've lost weight. You're more limber. I said, that's not the fucking point. Because you know what Jaren is trying to avoid for me not
conflict.
To stand there away from
yes.
whoever.
Yes.
You know, because she knows her wife. I'm like, nope. She's like, please, 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 please get in the car on the passenger side and just leave. I'm like, no. So I waited. So Becky.
Of course.
Because I wasn't going to, you know, it's Becky, and you know she's a millennial, comes out of, so she was in Kinko's. And I'm like, so, honey, is there a particular reason? Kinko's. I'm sorry, it's not Kinko's anymore, it's FedEx. And I said, why did you park here? I couldn't get in my car. But I had a lot to carry. Not, I'm sorry, or... I'm like, are you fucking kidding me with that shit? And then she goes, well, you don't have to yell at me. I'm like, bitch, you're lucky that's the only thing I'm going to do. And I'm like, I'm not yelling. You haven't heard yelling. I've never. I'm like, you never what?
Well, maybe you should.
I'm like, she's like, well, what kind of attitude? I'm like, you know what? Get in your car and move before I said, because I'm like, I do not want to catch a case. So please get in your car and leave so I can go about my business. I had a lot to carry. Bitch, what? So, yeah, that's how
I... Well, you know what a hillbilly does when you got a lot to carry?
You get a shopping cart.
You get a shopping cart. You park the shopping cart at the sidewalk of the store. You go and you get your happy ass mm-hmm. in the car, and you drive up and you cheat, and you put your flashers on, and mm-hmm. you put your shit in the car in the fire lane and hope that there's no crisis requiring a fire engine. That's what you do.
That part. That's what you do. That's what you do. That part. You go in
now,
the
I mean,
store.
Now, I mean, California being California, y'all might be a little more hard-assed about it than we are.
This is what you do. What she should have did, like, she should have found a parking space, walked her happy ass into Kinko's, bought what she had to buy, left it at the register, go back and get her car, come and park it by the door at Kinko's, and bring her shit out and load her car up. Or go to the Vons.
And you know what?
Get a shopping cart.
I know there's probably not a lot of them, but at Kinko's, they have these people called employees. And if you say, oh my God, I've got so much to carry.
I got so much to somebody, you know, because
somebody,
you know, I'm pretty sure that one of the male employees would have helped her. And she had just, you know, batted her eyelashes and said, I need help, please. You stupid, fucking, clueless, entitled, privileged.
I know.
See, next Tuesday. Yeah, I went there. So,
the front door. Yep.
See, this is why, because, see, I needed to make this call because I needed to hear that chuckle that you do. Because you it's the laughter through the tears and the grief. Because, you know, all the Prozac in the world, all the Dorazine darts in the world. It still comes back, but for those moments that we can laugh away our pain for the brief moments, that's what I'm here for, because I love you.
Thank you. Bless you.
And
we love you as
Agnes.
Well. And I will tell
and
her.
And I know you got to go.
And well, no, I got to. But I got to pass information along before we go, because you got an answer from Shorty.
Oh, okay.
Answer in the hoodie now, about to bloom. Sold home in Mid City near CVS on Venison Western.
Oh wow! Okay.
Now
my God! I used to live right down the street from there. I used to tell Shorty I used to live on Van Ness between. between Venice and Washington. Holy shit. Okay.
Now I'm in the hood, blocks from the King LAPD department.
So she lives, I know exactly, she lives on off of King and Western, between Western and Normandy.
So she says, my friend's dad passed away. He was Air Force. We're about to turn his family home into a home for veterans. Lots of construction, hordes of work. It's worth it. It's what we do so others may live. How about that?
Yeah. After what's happening with Will and all the crises that he's going through, his mom and I, we're looking into starting a group home for high-functioning autistic kids, you know, in their 20s. So, you know, not so much a group home, something better. So that might be my next calling, my calling, because of all the, I've made strides with him. She called me in tears, and she sent me this beautiful email, and she's like, you know, for the last part, you've said, she literally said, Bob, I've saved her family. I've saved her marriage, and that I saved her family because of the things that I've done with Will, that I've done things with him that nobody else could do. I said, girl, honey, it's not black magic. Come on now. But I see what I can do. And this is without training. This is just that common sense. Don't take no prisoners. And love you, but I will step off into your ass when I need to, kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? And so maybe this is what I need to do. Who knows? Maybe that's the calling. That maybe I might have found my purpose without even realizing what my purpose was or is.
And there we go.
And there we go. And on that note, oh, wait a second. Is there a challenge out before I go?
No, we got all done this evening.
So where are you at on fundraising for? Did you make your money for this for tonight?
We are even for last night and tonight, and Shirley's challenge got met. So tomorrow we will have just ordinary fundraising.
Okay. So to start tomorrow off, without it being tomorrow,
yes.
I'm going to go to start tomorrow's fundraising. Got a $50 challenge off for tomorrow.
Beautiful. $50 for tomorrow. If the overnight crew hears that and wants to jump in, that's awesome. Because like I said, I can't predict it. I want to be here every night. I'll try to be here every night. But
especially in the event, and especially for you overnight people who are listening to the podcast, in the event that, and we're going to call it, you know, just in the event that Bob is not here. As a matter of fact, today is tomorrow's Thursday. So I'm going to do this. In the event, because of what's happening, and we're going to call this in case of an emergency challenge. In the event that Bob is not here tomorrow or Friday, I have a $50 challenge for tomorrow and for Friday.
Bless your heart. In the event. Thank you so much. Yeah, we'll call this in case of emergency match Tracy.
In case of an emergency match Tracy challenge.
Thank you, Tracy.
Okay.
And I'll be haunting.
I love you so much.
And I'll be haunting the mailbox.
Haunting the mail. And it's coming. So you'll be seeing it soon. I don't know when, but I think it'll
be. See, sometimes with UPS, and FedEx, they just say fuck it and drop it off at the post office.
Really?
Yeah, I shit you not.
But it's okay. That's just fucking.
But the post office gets paid for delivering it. UPS and FedEx pay the post office.
Okay. Well, I don't care as long as it winds up where it's supposed to wind up. And now that you found, you know, manna from heaven with that sourdough bread, and I even, oh my God, here's the scary, that freaky, that we share the same brain part. I think I wrote on the note with, you know, make sure you have special really for sourdough bread with really good butter. Oh.
And I got both waiting.
Oh my God, the note is got you are, I can't wait to get the text message when you get the note. Oh my God, this is so freaking scary real. Ooh.
Well, I'll probably also have Oh, by the way, yeah, I know. I can't let you go. Well, whatever. But I'm on a campaign against briars.
Well, I thought you liked you some briars. Wait, eh?
Well, I did until they lied to me.
What did it? who do they do they do they so do they are they
for years for years for years I've bought
Trump
the,
or something?
Yeah, for years I've bought the Breyers vanilla because it you turn the ingredients around on the side and it says milk, cream, sugar. That's
uh-oh.
It. Vanilla. Milk, cream, uh-oh. Sugar, vanilla. Well, uh-oh. On the front of the carton, oh, it no. still says, made with milk, cream, sugar, and vanilla. You turned it, and I never would have suspected, but something in my brain went, wait a minute, if they're telling me that on the front of the, so I better look.
And
so there it was,
with.
Ingredients, milk, cream, sugar, vanilla, vegetable gum. And so now the only vanilla ice cream I can get that's milk, cream, sugar, and vanilla is Häagen-Dazs at $7 for not even a half gallon. For $7
okay,
for a pint
well,
and a half. Pissed me
now
off.
Now that you're talking about food, now I got to tell you what I did last night. Now, see, now you didn't open the Pandora's box. So,
uh-oh, I got clapped back.
You know, we had the... So... We have the, we had the food wars because remember, I grew up broke as I am black. So we didn't have, we did not have knife and fork beef, you know, steaks. We had fork cut steaks, you know, smothered.
Yes.
So, you know, she's a meat and potatoes person because she grew up, you know, they had a little change in their pockets. Shit, nah, there was five of us, motherfuckers. So we didn't have that kind of shit. So, you know, she and I, so we've come to, I wanted fish yesterday because I just don't do beef and it fucks with my stomach. So I decided, okay, I'm going to have fish. I will make you a steak. So I seared some orange roughy, really light, delicious,
nice.
But this is what else I did. I've got some black beans, some diced tomatoes, some sliced carrots, and some corn. Season that with some cumin, some curry powder, some chili powder, and a little seasoning salt. But look what I found in the. Are you ready for it?
Wait
for it.
Yeah, here it comes.
Thai curry rice, carrot rice.
Well, that just sounds yummy.
Bob, I put that on top. I got the Thai curry carrot rice, put my bean concoction on top of that, sliced some avocado, and then got a little bit of pico de gallo. Holy shit. We'll put the fish on top of that, on top with some the avocado with the pico de gallo. Mother of God.
Yes, absolutely.
Yep. And
I
then
mean, that's
the,
like,
you know,
that's,
then,
that's like... That's like some of that fusion stuff they do in those restaurants whose names I can't pronounce.
That part. And so it was, you know, because I had, you know, so I had Thai, I had curry, we got Mexican, Thai food, all sorts of stuff happened in Indian, you know, and it was, I mean, because I just started doing stuff. And I was like, oh, my God. And I wanted to tell you about it, but I'm like, there's too much going on with you right now. And I'm like, nope, not going to do it. But, you know.
But we did it. Tracy,
but we
enjoy
did it,
your
but
swim.
You go, thank you, love. Thank you, love. I love you and Agnes so very, very much. And I hope that package gets to you sooner than later because it'll be just kind of consider it there's the bomb in Gilead.
Exactly. Exactly.
That part. I love you so much.
We love you. Take care and have a good evening.
You too, baby.
See
good night.
You. Bye. Thank you all for your kind consideration, your compassion. Thank you so very much. This is a community. This is not, I don't know what it's not, but it, by God, is a community. 16 years in the making. Thank you all. From Agnes, from me, thank you all. So I'll try to be here tomorrow evening. Everything's kind of touch and go right now, but I will try to be here tomorrow evening. Thank you to all of you who keep the program on the air, who keep us in your hearts. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you this evening to Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Ace of HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. This year, celebrating 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. With all our love. Later, y'all.